Previously on 24.
This is Colonel Ike Dubaku. We have the CIP device. We demand the complete withdrawal of the U.S. Naval Strike Force by this time tomorrow.
You are recalling the invasion force.
Now that determination has yet to be made.
I implore you, do not abandon my country.
It's Samantha Roth. She says she has new information regarding my son's death.
Roger was tasked with auditing the brokers in his department. He uncovered other blind accounts, accounts that were traced to a senior member of your wife's administration. It's all here. Account numbers, trading records, everything that he knew.
Bauer must have worked out this escape with Almeida's people.
The son of a bitch played me, had me believing the Bureau was compromised. Someone on the inside working against us. I realize now it was him all along.
He played us both.
I'm gonna make this right, Larry. Whatever it takes, I will find Bauer and Almeida. You're out of time, Mr. Tanner. Tell me what you know.
I'm not gonna tell you a damn thing.
Where is Almeida? Tanner says Almeida's crew has a plan to abduct him.
Former Prime Minister of Sangala.
Matobo? When?
Pretty much now.
Why didn't you call the authorities?
He couldn't, Jack.
Why not?
He found out Emerson's client was Dubaku.
That's who you believe has agents inside the government.
Dubaku's the key to this thing, Jack. If we're gonna uncover the conspiracy, we have to get to him before he leaves the U.S.
We got away from the FBI.
Yeah, I heard. I also heard it was Jack Bauer who broke you out.
He's on board now. Package is the first.
Former Prime Minister Matobo Sangala.
Simon is to grab him, deliver him to Colonel Dubaku.
Where's Matobo? Where is he?
It's a safe room, reinforced concrete.
Jack, we leave here without Matobo. We lose our only chance of getting into Dubaku.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 1 p.m.
Hello, my name is John Kassar. I'm the executive producer and director on the show and this particular episode. And with me is Annie.
Hello.
Annie Wershing. She's the actress that plays Rennie Walker. She was supposed to introduce herself, but I just did it for her. Hopefully she'll have lots of good insight into the show or just be giggling through the whole thing, one or the other. So we're episode 5 here, so by this point you're well into the show.
Yes, just giving a talking to Tanner.
Now, the whole FBI thing, did you research? What did you do for that?
Well, you know, I was cast so last minute. I had basically a week before we started. So while we started shooting, I read a couple of books about female FBI agents trying to make their way in the male world. Definitely older, you know, they were in the Bureau in the 70s and 80s, but it was interesting.
But you also have a great story when we were actually in Washington, D.C., and we went to the real CTU, but there were FBI agents there, too, and they pulled you aside. It was interesting how they gravitated towards you.
We went to NCTC, and Jeffrey and I actually went to the FBI portion of it, and we're just talking to them about upholding the law and all of that, and they were very adamant about the FBI above all the other departments is very much no matter what you do things by the law, no matter what you protect the people. And we were very engaged, you know, we were talking to them a lot about it, and they liked how interested we were in it. And so the one guy said, come here, let me show you this. And he showed me his briefcase, and inside he had a little mini Bill of Rights.
Wow.
And
that he lived by.
That he carries with him when they go do things in the field. And I was like, oh my God, you know, that'd be so cool. And, you know, is there one of these laying around that I can have? And they're like, no.
So your character then was pretty much really what happens out there.
But
the FBI are the guys.
But the cool thing is that then we were about to leave and he chased us down and he gave me his.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, if there's any way you could work this into the show, that'd be great.
Which, don't look for it, because we
Because it didn't work. But I still have it.
The idea we definitely put into the show. Now, do you find this hard acting and driving like this? Is this tough? Yeah, you almost hit people. What's the deal?
Yeah, it's a little hard. You know, Kiefer gave me some tips about the mirrors. As long as you look at the mirrors enough times.
I say that, of course, because she's not really driving. We do all this in studio, and it's what we call poor man's process, where we actually just bring the car in, and then there's a rear screen projection. So actors don't have to really worry about hitting pedestrians.
Yeah, but you have to look like you might.
But you have to look. But the hard part then is that you have to look like you're driving. But you look like you're doing a pretty good job. Look, your eyes are flicking all over the place.
But I would say the weirder part is that Larry is actually not on the phone.
Yeah, that's right.
It's usually Marcy hiding in the back seat.
That's right. We have our reader, Marcy Michelle, who actually does all the dialogue and does it very well and does it quickly.
She does it very well and fast-paced, but she's usually literally hiding behind me in the back seat there, like laying down so she can't be seen.
And of course, this is an interesting scene because this, you know, starts the relationship. Did they? Didn't they? That we virtually play most of the year,
yeah.
I would think.
Yeah, yeah.
Plays out right to the end.
Oh, poor Larry.
Don't say anything yet.
No.
You got it. Oh, okay. I thought you were spoiling.
Never. I'm saying poor Larry. He had faith in me, and I'm letting him down.
I know you do that too. And this is kind of interesting too. This is fun. This is, you know, these little scenes are so tough for production and television that. Only because you can't afford to go to an airport to do one phone call. Mm. So this is all green screen. You know, what you see behind her there is just, we could send one camera, which is easy to do, and shoot at the airport where, you know, people are around the luggage carousel waiting for their luggage, and then she's really just on a green screen stage. And it looks pretty good.
It looks really good. I didn't know that.
There's no way of knowing. So it's one of our little tricks when you can't afford to go just to do one shot.
Mm. I love her.
Yeah, great actress. I mean, we, you know, really strong cast, and this was a tough day for them. Actually, I remember shooting all this, and what happens, what's coming up, but really tough. And of course, Jack and the boys are stuck outside. Now you're chasing them down at this point, right?
I'm
You've got the lead.
Yeah.
I know the audience, when they saw this on the internet, they were all screaming, "Why didn't you wait for backup?"
I know. I've seen that online as well.
See, we do. For all those people that don't think we read your posts, we are secretly reading your posts, except the ones that tell us we do a really bad job. We don't read those.
I wasn't too happy about, how dumb is she?
they can get like that. Come on. She's a maverick.
It wouldn't get...
Jack Bauer doesn't wait for backup.
Right?
Why would
she? I don't know why I got caught, but it wouldn't have gotten the cage with them, so it wouldn't have been as cool.
It's, you know, all these situations that we're constantly setting up. What was it like the first time you came to the show? I mean, obviously this is a show that's been going for 6 years when you come on.
Yes.
But you were a fan, which makes it a little different than a lot of the actors that come to us and have never seen us before.
I was a huge fan. I'd seen every episode of every season as it aired on television, not running one of those DVDs like this.
Like a real fan.
Like a real fan. So it was very, very surreal. My callback process, as you know, but I was supposed to have read with Kiefer a few times, and that never ended up happening. So the first time I actually met him was my very first scene that I shot on the show. It was actually his first scene back for season 7 as well.
What scene was that?
It was the scene in my office in episode 1 where I'm showing him that Tony Almeida is alive on the screen.
So it's almost the first scene you meet each other as characters,
too,
which is nice.
Besides the Senate hearing, yeah.
I know, the director planned it that way.
Yeah, he must be brilliant.
I usually like to do that, if I can. I mean, your schedule doesn't always allow.
Right.
I know with one of the funny stories, when with Kim Raver, their first scene was a love scene that we did for the prequel.
Right.
Which was Kiefer Sutherland meet Kim Raver, now slam her up against the wall. It was pretty funny, actually.
Lovely.
But it actually, I think somehow it worked. It was strange, but... But that was their first scene. But so it's always nice to have your first scene be the first scene.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was really nice. And, you know, I was very nervous. But my favorite story to tell is Sterling, our prop master, when I came in, you know, I was shaking everybody's hands, and he, like, pushed my hand aside and said, we hug on this show. And that's, you know, that's the feeling I had every day since then.
And that's kind of true. We are kind of a huggy show.
Well, no, just the welcome, you know, big family feeling. And
now, did you ever go through, a lot of actors go through on our show, especially after seeing it for as many years as you have, looking at that next script going, am I going to catch a bullet? Or did you feel pretty confident because your character was kind of step in step with Kiefer's character that you were going to last 24 episodes?
I opted, because a lot of people on the show go up and talk to the writers and try to get a feel for what they're thinking and what their arc's going to be. And I sort of opted, knowing the show, I'm like, if it's going to come, it's going to come. And I'd rather just play, you know, the exact scenes and the episodes that I know about right now and not, you know, because also if you know something in the future, you can more easily tip your hand.
Right.
So my experience...
Not that anyone knows what's happening in the future, mind you.
Exactly. Not, even if they tell you one thing, it doesn't mean it's necessarily what's going to happen. But I was generally you know, going into the hair and makeup trailer when I knew the next script was about to come out, being like, do we have it? Do we have it yet? Because the hair and makeup usually gets it a day or so before the actors do, because they have to prep for a lot of stuff. And so I would secretly find the next script and thumb through first to see all the pages with Renee's name on them, and then I would go back and read the whole script.
All actors do.
That's horrible, isn't it?
And you just made sure none of them had you take a bullet.
Yeah, and especially on this show, you can't...
You never know.
You can't wait.
Yeah, you never know.
But no, and then you see things... So at this point, everyone's seen all these episodes, right?
Yes, up to this point. Assuming. Yes.
Assuming. So I'm talking about, I can talk about the end of episode 5 without. Or no.
I don't know. Sure, we could. Okay. I'm sure people that watch commentaries watch it first without our voices.
Right.
I would.
Right. I was just saying things like the things that happens in the end of this episode are the things that you read ahead and go, oh my God, awesome.
But in this one, did you think you'd be. You'd be unburied.
Well, see, the good thing is that 5 and 6 come out together.
No, that's right, yeah. So you get to know right away.
You get to know right away.
You get to know right away. No, it is a tough thing for... And, you know, Kiefer said the same thing. He said he learned a long time ago, obviously many, many episodes ago, because he's been on it for so long, that the best thing you can do is play the scene.
Yeah.
And he said as an actor, too, you don't get caught that way. Because if you're trying to play something that you might think is going one way, they even fool, you know, they fool the actors, they fool the directors.
Right.
The writing fools everybody. That's the idea of it. And to play towards one thing and then find out 2 scripts later it was completely the opposite, you kind of feel foolish. So he said, play the scene. That's all you can do.
Well, and it's interesting because for me being a fan, you know, now the show is basically ruined for me. Thanks a lot. But the closest thing to me still being able to watch it as a fan was reading the script for the first time in the hair and makeup trailer. And I would, you know, turning the page being like, no way. So that was very fun.
And well, actually, it's funny. Even as a director, it's the hardest thing for me because the writers, you know, are wandering in the halls while they're writing the scripts and they're pitching me little ideas and little pieces. And I'm like, please don't. Because I feel the same way. I can only be the audience the first time I read it. Mm. And the first time I read it, if I see something coming, if they tip the hat and I say, oh, I knew that was coming, then the audience knows it's coming. Mm-hmm. So I know it has to change. But that's not my only time. Once I read it the first time, we're pretty well then two inside, then it becomes a little different. It becomes very, very different. Now, I love this because... Kiefer made this great little potion here that gasses them out. Of course, we have to make up all these names so people aren't in their kitchen trying to make the potion.
Oh,
and, you know, God knows. God only knows the influence we have. So it was all made up names and no labels that you could see. And we're very conscious of that kind of thing all the time. And you're somewhere here still. Where are you?
I'm hiding outside.
You're taking like forever to get here.
I'm driving there very speedily.
That's because, you know, it's funny on our show. We always joke that time is totally elastic on our show. It takes a long time when we want it to, and it takes a short time when we want it to. So in other times when it takes no time to get to someplace, we needed you to take a little bit of time here. And you're definitely doing that.
Like these guys, the AG's people got there very fast.
Yeah, and these guys got there like lightning.
I've already conducted it.
They had a pass to the carpool lane, obviously. This is great. What was it like working with Janine? This was kind of a new thing for her.
Yeah, it was fantastic. You know, it was very funny. Your rehearsal of a scene with Janine was never actually what it was when you shot it.
Yeah, not even close. I would say not even a hint of what the scene was going
to
be.
So that was very interesting to get used to. I mean, Kiefer couldn't be further from that. Yeah. You know how it's going to be after you rehearse, for the most part, you know.
But Janine was on. It was like a comedy act that had to happen before we actually
But it wasn't even like, hey, look at me, I'm being funny. She was just doing her thing.
Yeah. But then when you're on, she was on.
Oh,
she's very good.
See, here I am.
No, finally.
I was just far away.
Turn the lights off. Good.
Okay, where are we? Oh, I remember where we shot. This was beautiful.
And we shot very quickly. If I remember, we had 2 units going, actually. They were shooting inside and we were shooting outside.
Yeah.
A nice part of L.A. that looks like it's Washington, D.C. Yeah. We obviously were dealing with that all year. But look how... I think that looks like Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Watch out for the palm trees in the background. I think that's like a game that'll happen all year. Watch out for the palm trees. Look at you checking your gun. You're so FBI. This was another great set by Joseph Hodges. It felt so real. You know, this part and the safe room and that little sort of room outside the safe room was all set. And then the rest of the house, the kitchen and the exterior, were obviously a real place. Kitchens are the things that are always the hardest to build because they... It's just the most expensive thing to build. So you try not to build them if you don't have to.
Oh, his eyes.
I know. It's hard watching this.
Yeah.
We had to put smoke is one of the hardest things to keep consistent when you do these kind of scenes, because obviously all these different angles are all different setups at different times. So this is CG smoke, actually.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's a combination of real smoke and CG smoke to keep it consistent. Because, you know, in any two shots, it was either heavier in one, non-existent in another. And there she goes. She couldn't take it.
Way to go.
She couldn't take the gas. Notice a little Fiji water ad that we got back there. Nice little product placement.
Lovely.
You know, that's the future of the business. So. And that way we did it without really offending anybody. Everyone's happy. So that was a set, and obviously this is all a real place.
I'm around the corner.
Oh, you're going to come in here soon. Now you know you would have waited for backup. You weren't gonna.
Yeah, I was just saying. I was just trying to get the plate.
Yeah,
and then.
I mean, we try to do that as often as we can. You know, try to keep the characters as smart as we can keep them. At least
I didn't just go in. I at least called Larry.
And you did call Larry.
I don't know how I didn't hear this guy behind me, but whatever.
You know, you were too busy. You were too busy. Renee, listen. I'll never forget, too, when we did this. Obviously, you only have a certain number of phones you can actually break.
That's right.
I think this gentleman, I think, broke two in the first rehearsal. At which point, Sterling looked at me and went, what? I don't have that many.
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, here we go. But we finally, I think we glued one together. There we go.
Oh.
Breaking the phone. And it is a real phone, for those of you wondering if it's a plastic made-up phone.
Yes.
It's not. It's a real phone that we cracked in half. One that's given to us, of course. So this became interesting now because obviously the two of you, you know, with Jack Bauer and Renee, have been working pretty close together.
Mm-hmm.
He did sort of knock you out.
Strangle me,
hog tie
me. Yeah.
Hog tie you. It was gentle, though.
Well, okay,
gentle.
Sure.
But now it gets tough.
Not cool.
She's FBI. Her name is Walker. She's the one that pulled me out of the Senate hearing to help him find Tony.
Ooh,
thank goodness.
Close.
It was close.
What was it like working with these guys, too?
Oh.
Peter Wingfield and obviously Connors Bernard playing Tony Almeida. Because you got a lot of scenes with all of them sort of together.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was a lot of the poor man's process inside the van. It was most of my stuff with Peter. Carlos, as you've probably already learned from other commentaries, is quite...
It's funnier than his character.
Quite the clown.
Yeah.
And get your hands off me. So it was never a dull moment with him. You know, I'd heard so much about his different pranks he's played on people. I was always on the lookout and had my eyes open.
You never know.
And we're taking up in the big yellow van.
Yeah. No one will notice that.
No one will. I think earlier we were in a big blue van.
Blue van. You know, you just get tired of black vans and black cars. You just do.
Well, no,
and
it's
after
like
7 years,
psychology.
We're done. Look, who's going to suspect
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Why would a bad guy possibly be in?
And again, once, you know, this is not inside a real moving truck. This is something we do in studio. In fact, I think this truck even had that was a set. I can't remember. I know that there was
that
a wall. One of the walls actually moved out of that so we could put the cameras in because it's too tight to get cameras in otherwise. So, and I think that was a pretty good day.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were in that truck for a day
running
around. We had a lot of scenes in that truck. And, you know, the cameras move a little bit, and we have effects guys led by Stan Blackwell jerking the truck a little here and there to make it feel real.
Yeah, rocking. I definitely liked glaring at him through the cage.
Lots of glaring.
Yeah.
The cage thing was kind of interesting,
too. Yeah, it was
cool.
Yeah. It was very cool.
We're always looking for that dynamic. Now, you were one of the lucky ones to go to Washington.
I think
there's no scenes here that in Washington, but in the early episodes, you got to do all those phone calls with the monuments in the background.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Washington was wonderful. I'd never been there before, and it was just so incredible just to shoot. I think we shot on the other side. We shot on the other side of the lake. Wait.
Yeah.
In front of the Capitol building.
Right.
Yeah. It was really, really cool. And just all the touristy stuff that we got to do. You know, we had lunch at the White House, and, like, we toured NCTC and saw all the monuments. And it was just very, very cool to be shooting actually where it was supposed to take place.
And we did it early in the year, too, and I think it helped. I think it helped sort of everyone get a sense of the place.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, for those of us who have been on the show for 6 years, it was very different because, you know, we had the luxury, of course, when we're shooting here in L.A., pointing the camera wherever you want, but suddenly it became a little trickier than that. You couldn't see palm trees, and you had to pick architecture that reflected Washington. But the weeks that we spent here in Washington, it wasn't that many. I think we only shot there for 2 weeks. We shot 8 episodes worth of footage for 2 weeks, but
there's little pieces
here and there,
scenes from different episodes. Yeah. So that was interesting too. You think you're finished with episode one, and then you're
then
actually
you see
doing
more
it.
Of it. Yeah,
and then actually we did some of episode 1 a year later.
A year later. That's because we had time to. Yes. We actually could do that, but it was fun shooting there. It really made a difference. And of course, once you're there, then you can put your camera wherever you want. And then of course you're not, you know, you're looking for specific monuments that are going to at least tell the people that we weren't faking.
We were actually there. And you know what was funny there? That was the problem, was all the sirens.
Yeah, people don't realize. In fact, someone told me, I can't remember who, but someone said, good luck, because it is the loudest city in America.
We were always holding for helicopters
and it truly is.
Sirens.
The funny thing is when, you know, here in L.A. or most other cities, that would get people's attention. I noticed that in Washington, no one even stopped their daily routine.
Perfect.
It was just another siren, just another motorcade, just another helicopter. And everyone just kept doing what they do.
It was such a cool visit there because so many people were so excited to meet us.
Yeah, that was really interesting
for us. The chief of police, that woman that came and met us, and you know, it was just very cool.
Well, we have a pretty big fan base amongst the Washington who's who. I mean, most of the politicians, I think, both the front runners, you know, for the presidency, were both fans of the show, which made it kind of fun. Mr. McCain actually made a cameo. We're waiting now for Barack, see if he can get in his schedule time to come and do a little cameo for us. But no, we're well loved by both sides of the fence in Washington. So it's kind of interesting. Now, what did you think of Cherry playing the president? I'm only asking that. I'm asking that totally as a fan, as someone that's seen all the other years. We've had quite a variety of presidents.
Fabulous. Yeah, I think it's interesting to sort of go back to the Palmer-esque president.
Mm-hmm. I'd say she's the closest. To Palmer, to David Palmer.
Yeah, to David Palmer. Yeah. Yes. And she's just fabulous and could not be a nicer person.
Yeah.
You talk with her and instantly you feel like you've known her forever.
Yeah, she does have that ability. But what I really love about Cherry and what you see her doing even here, and she did it from the very first scene, and just it was just a natural instinct from her, is that she was probably the first president that I've worked with. And I've worked with every administration just because I've been here since year one, that actually listened. You could actually see her listening, which really is interesting because I think you know, sometimes, especially in movies, they portray this president, you know, mostly men, obviously, but they portray them always, you know, they have the right answer for everything. They always, you know, there they are with the decision. Mm-hmm. You could see Cherry's wheels turning. Mm. You can see her analyzing every point of view before she makes her decision, which I think is probably closer to a reality to what these guys have to do, how much they have to weigh before they make these decisions. So, you know, that I saw her do right away, and she does it consistently through the whole series.
Yeah.
Well, yet another affair. This is Reese Corio and Ever Carradine.
I need you to babysit the town.
Being interrupted, of course, by Janine. It was interesting because we set up the whole thing with her, with Reese and his wife, of course. And then we reveal that there's a little office romance going on, which you'll see in other episodes is going to lead to something. It always does on this show.
I love her purple tights and purple shirt.
She really was fun to work with. She really brought a whole new dimension. Very Chloe-esque, of course.
Yes. But different. But different. So different.
I know that was people's initial reaction,
but
I think you really notice it, obviously, in the episodes to come where they eventually do get together.
Yeah.
And then you really notice that they're very different.
Yes, sir.
This is Peter Arnotti, a great actor. Very small part, but great actor, which is always nice on the show. We always manage to do that somehow. We've been able to attract some you know, great talent to our show, as you can see by just our regular cast this year. It's pretty amazing.
I want everybody
So that's been fun. To make finding her there. And Jeffrey does a great job here. Yeah, I mean, this is not easy to play what he's playing in all these little bits, but you can just feel the distress for you, yet he keeps denying it.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Again, did a great job for us this year.
Great
really
job.
Wonderful and very lucky to have
fun to work with
an actor like Jeffrey. Yeah, it was neat because it was a total reset for us to start.
Have a whole new crew.
Have CTU go away and have a whole new. You look so sad here.
Because I should have protected them.
See, again, that's your FBI training kicking in,
isn't
it?
Yeah, see?
You're not even thinking about yourself. You're so Jack Bauer.
Yeah, shooting all of this was really cool.
Yeah, and, you know, just for me, it's funny. People always ask me about the action scenes and, you know, blowing things up and the big, you know, gunfights that we have and how difficult that is to shoot. And I got to tell you, I'm at a point in my career now where I find that pretty straightforward. Not that it's easy, but I don't worry about it as much as I worry about this.
Yeah.
You know, when you write whatever this was, I mean, this was, you know, almost, I'd say, a quarter of the episode, four people sitting in a truck.
Mm-hmm.
You can't move. You can't move around. You can't tell a story by moving your characters and you know, doing any of that. They're just sitting there. So it becomes much more of a challenge. And, of course, there's more pressure on you at that point for, you know, more pressure on the actors to really keep it interesting and pull it off. Not that I have any trouble with the actors I have in this scene, mind you, but that really is the reality.
Well, and when people talk to me about this part, about it being such a big action part, you know, running around, guns and all of that, I am always like, yeah, but there's, you know, Kiefer and I had some really amazing, meaty dialogue, emotional stuff combined with the action. That was just...
And you know, my theory is, and I might be wrong, but that's why they come back.
Yeah.
They come back for those scenes.
Yeah.
You know, if we do our job right on this show, it's about the characters and it's about coming back to see what happens to them. Unbelievable. We're still in this truck.
Oh, my God.
Well, the FBI is trying to figure out what the heck is going on.
Look, I don't care where you find the men. Just get them out there looking.
FBI, too, I think looks great. Mm-hmm. Again, Joseph did a great job. Again, a little different, a little harder. It's not the fancy CTU that we had for so many years. But
which, by the way, when we were in Washington at NCTC, I wasn't part of their show then, but CTU was actually built first, and the new NCTC, the actual place in Washington, D.C., looked exactly like it.
And that's not an exaggeration. I mean,
exactly.
It had the staircases. It had the wire
same,
stuff
like,
to shoot through.
Silvery,
yeah, it
metallic.
Had the big screen.
Yeah.
It was pretty pretty amazing, actually. I think they actually were giggling about it. I don't think they'd ever want to admit that the real CTU copied the fake CTU, but in actual fact, they did. We know they did. But they couldn't have been nicer.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
They were just absolutely amazing to us, and it was just a great experience. One we'd love to recreate at some point. It was just so much fun being there.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting set because it's a set of everything else we had left over from different years. And those, if you look up and you see those, you know, the big round green lights, that's actually a plane, part of a plane set.
I was just thinking that kind of looked like...
It's part of a plane set. These are all servers we had from the old CTU. And again, you're trying to save money, you want to reuse. And so, and actually, this is really funny. There's actual sets in here from the pilot we did together.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Annie and I did a pilot called Company Man for Fox. It didn't get picked up. That's where we met before we went here on 24. And we had a scientific, it wasn't a CTU, but we had a scientific set. And again, you don't want to waste that. And Fox owned it, and we were Fox. And so... We ended up inheriting it, and then there it was. So
I didn't even know.
Didn't go to waste. That blonde girl in the background is our post-production supervisor.
Oh, I missed it. Who was it?
With her dog, Amanda.
That's funny because I love watching the show now.
To see.
And now I want to go back to all the seasons that I previously watched to see all the people that now
I
know.
To see the crew members.
Yes.
Yeah, there are a few, actually. There are a few. This is interesting, too, because this storyline starts to heat up in this episode and moves into 6, obviously, with a... Well, it's a, kind of a conclusion in 6, but this storyline really starts to heat up here. You know, I mean, if I was a fan, I'd be suspecting something right away because someone's drinking, and no one ever drinks or eats on the show.
We do when they cut away.
Yeah, Washington. That's what I always said. That's when they drink, that's when they eat, and that's definitely when they go to the washroom. This is a beautiful space.
Don't mind turning on the air.
Really hot in here. Yeah, where was this?
It's actually a loft in downtown L.A. That's actually absolutely empty. So everything you see, we brought in there. And that's, again, Claudia Rebar, our set decorator extraordinaire. She's just absolutely amazing, you know, makes it look so comfortable. I mean, when you first walk in, it's really just a big concrete space. And then you have to kind of imagine what Claudia is going to put in. And then you give her notes here and there, and she comes up with what she comes up with. But she did a great job. Rubber gloves isn't good.
Yeah, never a good sign.
When you're feeling drugged and someone's putting rubber gloves on, I'd run the other way. But see that wall, the wall run. Behind the, it's actually double the space that you see there. That's how big this one area was. And behind that tree, that's a fake wall we put in right there to just, you know, because it was too big. I mean, already it's verging on too big a space for this one single woman, but it kind of works.
Oh.
Mrs. Colin Fiore, of course, he's a friend of mine from back in Canada. Great, great actor. Tried to get him virtually, I think. This was probably our third or fourth year that we tried to get our schedules together. But Colin is definitely the hardest working or definitely most working actor in Hollywood. So we could never get our schedules together. And suddenly there was an opening for both of us, so we were able to put it together. So that was a real plus for us.
Roger died quickly.
And he got the honor to play the first gentleman for us.
It's pretty fabulous.
It's weird to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a funny story about all these pictures in the back here. When we actually first shot this show was before the prequel, before we did Redemption. And so it didn't matter what the son looked like because he didn't really have any scenes. And so the son was actually one of the guys that worked up in the office. We just dressed him, put in, you know, pictures with Samantha, and put the pictures in. And then, of course, we wrote the prequel. Suddenly, the son was a real person, played by Eric Lively. And so we had to actually go back and reshoot all the pictures. And of course, everyone's first question was, can the assistant act? Which, at a point, was like, no, he's a nice guy, but not really. And so we had to go and replace all those pictures.
Vossler.
Agent Vossler. Who we introduce into Redemption.
And I believe I meet his wife and child.
That's right.
Later.
That's right. You and Vossler have a bit of a history in a strange way. But this was another great scene, the one with Vossler going up to Samantha here. I mean, look at that. You can't beat that.
Definitely in Washington for this.
And, you know, the first time I shot in Washington, too, and realize, of course, when you watch all these other movies that are shot in Washington, you go, oh, wow, look, they're all shooting on the same street. You got the Capitol in the background. But then you get there and you realize, no, that's not true. You actually see the Capitol from everywhere. Almost the whole city, because the Capitol virtually is the hub of a spoked type wheel as far as streets go. And every street comes into it. So you could be, you know, at the end of 10 different, you know, big avenues and look down and there it is. So it actually wasn't that difficult to make sure it was in the background.
Right this way.
This is Carly Pope, yet another Canadian.
Yes.
Tell you, it's just a Canadian invasion of actors.
Why is that?
Yes, we were talking about Canadian actors on 24, and there are a lot of them. First of all, there are a lot of them on many shows. I think they're just highlighted on this show more than any others because I'm a Canadian, or was at one point. But basically, it's you know, you want to constantly work with people that you like, that you know can do the job. I mean, our relationship is exactly like that. We worked together on the pilot and then brought you to 24. So basically what happens is that Joel Surnow did, you know, La Femme Nikita for 8 years in Canada. You know, we know Colm from there, and I worked in Canada for many years too. So you're just going to go back to people you like, and the border just becomes invisible, really. You're going to just get actors that you trust.
People start thinking I'm Canadian because I work on the show.
There you go. Tell them yes, you can get some jobs in Canada. So really, you know, we don't even think about it, quite honestly. It just happens to be that way. Carly, I don't really know. She's a young actress. I left Canada seven, eight years ago, so she would have been really young when I was there. But she's just, again, a good actress that came into our casting room. And the funny thing is, no one obviously wants to advertise that they're Canadian when they're down here in America, because it can work against you. Mm-hmm. But I can tell from their resume, the second I see, I see their shows, I know right away, and I go, hey, you're Canadian. And they go, oh, damn, how'd you know? So, I know these shows. I used to work on them. But again, you're just, quite honestly, the best bet is to go for the best actor, and that's what we've always done on 24. I mean, even small parts like this, they're so important.
Yeah.
You know, that all the parts really are strong. You know, especially when you're around Kiefer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one thing I knew you could do. Did you do it? Did you do it?
Did I what?
Did you stand toe-to-toe with Kiefer?
I think so.
You did a pretty good job, I think.
I think I kept up. That was definitely a big test of my my first day.
But you also have soap opera background, so that helped a little bit.
Not
in performance, maybe, but in memorization,
in
for
memorization
sure.
And being able to do things quickly.
Yeah.
You know, changing lines on the spot. And
yeah. And we shoot pretty quickly. I mean, as television shows go, we shoot very, very quickly.
Yeah.
We don't shoot as quick as soap operas, mind you, because the page count on soap operas is huge, but we do shoot pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And you kind of fell in line with that right away. I mean, one of your biggest scenes was the first one you did with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was lots of tech talk, lots of explaining mm-hmm. to do. He basically listened.
Yeah. Luckily, that was actually one of my audition scenes, too.
Oh, that's right. It was
so that was nicely
scene.
Planned as well, I'm sure, by a brilliant director.
I did that again, didn't I?
So, but even in that, there's lines that change and that are different. So.
But you did get a lot of scenes with Kiefer, obviously, through the whole year, and we knew that. We knew that was going to be a big part of the year, and although you're only writing a few episodes at a time as you go, we knew kind of the skeleton of what we want to do with Renee and Jack, and we knew that they'd be toe-to-toe the whole way, although this episode made it kind of, it was a mystery there, whether you're going to survive that burial. It's funny how this episode, just waiting for that. Come on, let's get to the burial. But I think even in that, I mean, it's coming up, but even in that, you got to stay strong.
Yeah.
You know, which was important, I think, for the character.
You're gonna have to look
I know
at
we talked about
this,
it on
yeah.
the day and tried to keep you as strong as, although you obviously were getting really emotional, which is good because that's obviously a real emotion that would happen when someone's got a gun to your head and you're looking at a trench. But I think there was a strength there that was really great.
Well, the emotion really just came from you telling me that I couldn't do all, you know, the flipping into this whole stunt by myself.
Right, because you wanted to. You did part of it, though, didn't you?
Well, I wasn't supposed to.
Yeah. I know you didn't take the big fall, but you did get flipped inside the hole. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did little pieces of it for sure.
Yeah. This was great, too. I love this tree.
Yeah.
This whole thing was a Western to me, this scene. So this tree became sort of my Old West Deadwood tree. That everyone kept saying, that's not very Washington. I'm like, grumble, grumble. I don't care.
Grumble.
I got a Western in my head. Just let me play out my little imagery here.
Tony.
And again, I remember writing this. It was really important to us because we've kind of done the fake death before here on 24 a few times. And so to me, I needed something that was going to top that.
Yeah.
You know, and the topping, of course, becomes the burial.
The burial.
So
yeah.
You do the fake death, and your audience goes, oh, we've seen that before. But then you get barrier.
Shovels,
and at that point, you go, oh, didn't see that before.
Yeah.
That's a new piece.
I mean, this was all pretty early. This seems like a long time ago.
Yeah, well, it was. It was still early. I mean, you know, in 24 episodes, it's only five. So.
Yeah, it must have been towards the beginning of even.
Yeah.
I'm not going to beg for my life, Jack.
Do you find these scenes harder just because of the emotional level of them?
This was definitely my first scene that had emotions in them.
At this scale.
Yeah, on this show.
Yeah.
You know, my first stuff with Kiefer where I had to be a little teary.
I understand that you were...
But strong.
But
look at
strong.
That chin.
Turn around.
You're gonna
I love that too. Just the half.
Yeah.
Turn around.
Half face.
spy.
What? Wait, what?
That was good. That was totally in sync when you did that. And of course, there's my deadwood tree. There's my deadwood tree in the Washington Mountain in the background.
Oof.
That was cool. We did that in CG, actually.
The little thing? I was wondering. Yeah.
We did the CG slice of the neck.
God, he's got good aim.
I'm telling you, that's a good shot. That's not the shot I would want to take. Because at no point do you go, oops, miss that. So again, you know, I want to play my audience where they will go, yeah, we kind of saw that before.
Yeah.
But I needed one more surprise. And that surprise, of course, is what's coming up, which is Barrier. Now, we ran out of light that day.
Yes.
We didn't get to bury you that day. We started sort of burying your double, I think.
Yeah, and then we had to recreate the mound of dirt on stage weeks later.
And we actually buried you at one point, didn't we? How was that?
Oh, yeah. you know, actually, the scariest part was the plastic. The very first time we did it, because there was actually a little tube of air that they had weaved in just so that there'd be fresh air.
Didn't want to kill you, Annie.
Right. Thank you. Very nice of you. But then with the plastic and then the weight of the dirt on top of it, the very first time we did it, and I breathed in for the first time, the plastic went in my mouth.
Oh, wow.
Which that was the only scary moment, because then there wasn't space because the dirt was on top of it to get the plastic back out of my mouth.
Right.
But other than that, it was fine.
Well, I got to tell you, it's one of those things that I couldn't have done. I didn't tell you that at the time, I'm sure. But yeah, so this hole, actually, not on this wide shot, but when you see the close work of Annie, this was a hole that we made in studio. All this is in studio. We lit it.
There's been some interesting talk about this, too, is that why wasn't I playing dead to Tony?
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit, too.
But
Tony was at that point on your side. I mean, you know, or...
Well, I didn't know.
Oh, you didn't know. That's right. That's a good question.
I saw that online as well.
And that's the end.